I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. This year marked the 60th anniversary of the founding of the State of Israel. For most Israelis and for many Jews around the world, it was a day of celebration. But for many Palestinians, it was the 60th year of Nakba, the catastrophe. That fundamental difference in worldview has informed so much of the debate about peace in the Middle East since. And although the region has produced many notable women leaders, for the most part, the voices of women are unheard. A new book highlights the struggle and hope for peace in the words of women. The title of the book is 60 Years, 60 Voices, Israeli and Palestinian Women. Joining us are editor Patricia Smith-Melton and two of the women whose voices are heard in the book. Barbara Sofer is a journalist and author who lives in Jerusalem, and Reem Al-Sharif is the principal of a school in Hebron in the West Bank, and they're all here with me. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Great to be here.
Patricia, if you talk to me about the idea for the book, it comes out of your organization Peace by Peace, which aims to foster relationships with women around the world who are working toward peace. But why the book?
Well, I have a special heart place for the Middle East, for Israel and Palestine. And Peace by Peace was active there. We had our first liaisons there, both the Palestinian and Israeli. And in June 2007, I was going to make about my fourth or fifth trip into the area, and there was fighting at that point between Hamas and Fatah. They were using guns against each other. And my Palestinian liaison said, perhaps this wasn't the time for me to go into the Palestinian Authority. And I said, let me think about it. And then I realized the next morning that it was the time to do more, not less, that when there is a crisis, you have different responses, and one can be to pull back, and sometimes that might be appropriate. But as a third party, I had the ability to go on both sides of the wall that the people there do not have. And so I could help them bring their voices at a time when it seemed even more needed than usual.
The book says that the book's agenda is to show the richness of female minds and hearts. I'm sure everyone would agree that that's worthwhile to do, but also to, quote, demonstrate that women are best prepared to reach across differences and to build peace on mutual goals. Who says? I mean, it strikes many of us that women can be as vicious as men, as violent as men, as duplicitous as men.
Absolutely. What we're talking about is generalities or the majority. And what we now know, well, we always knew that when a man is frightened, that when they're frightened, there would be a fight or flight response. What we now know is that with women, it's not a fight or flight response. It's a tend and befriend. You want to find out who that stranger is. You want to connect with them so that you get your security through knowing each other. And that is absolutely fundamental if you're going to have a meeting of the minds that is needed to build harmonious societies.
The book has a very interesting format. 30 Israeli women, 30 Palestinian women. The book is in English, Arabic, and Hebrew on every page. It's visually quite arresting. How did you figure out which women to profile and enlist?
Well, I had these great liaisons, Ilana Rosenman in Israel and Rula Salameh in Palestine. Now, I knew some of the women, but I also could say to them, well, I want a Palestinian policewoman. I want an Israeli soldier. I want a businesswoman. I want a teacher. I want a professional. And they would go and find these incredible women.
Barbara, let's go to you. Barbara, you are one of the Israeli women profile in the book. You're a journalist. You're also the spokesperson for Hadassah, which is a women's organization which is responsible for a number of health care institutions, also well-known in this country. How did they find you, and why did you want to participate?
Ilana approached me, asked me if I would be willing to do it. I think that she knew about my connection in Hadassah, which has been profiled very often as a bridge to peace because it's one of the settings in Israel where you'll see Israelis and Palestinians working together, being healed together, waiting together. I'm not sure what inspired her to ask me. Maybe she was looking for a religious woman who would be open. Maybe she'd read one of my columns in the Jerusalem Post. But she did turn to me. So here was an opportunity to get my opinion out there and to take part in something that was larger than just me.
One of your columns, you mentioned you write a weekly column for the Jerusalem Post. This year, one of your columns won a prize, and it focused on your experience sharing a room with a Palestinian woman from Hebron in Jordan, I think it was. Will you tell us a little bit about it?
Yes, and in fact, that started with the interview for this book, 60 Years, 60 Voices. And after hearing me being interviewed by Patricia, Ilana said to me, you know, you'd be good to go to Jordan. And she invited me to go to Jordan. We were five Jewish women, five Muslim women, and five Christian women. And the subject was religion, which could be very explosive. But in fact, we found we had many things in common. I, for instance, a Jewish woman who covers her hair, and I had a long conversation with a Jordanian woman who covers her hair, who felt that she was sometimes patronized by the men who with whom she worked. She was a consultant with an MBA, and I had been patronized enough myself for covering my hair. So we had other things in common. And my roommate and I didn't realize I'd have a roommate when I first went. It's always a surprise. And I was sleeping with just a small table in between with a Palestinian woman from Hebron. And she had to sleep with me, a Jewish woman from Jerusalem. And the first night we watched James Bond until we both fell asleep. And the second night was a Friday night, and she was very sensitive because I'm an observant Jew, and she didn't turn the TV on. So we talked all night, and I'd say somewhere about between 2 and 3 o'clock, we solved all the problems of the Middle East. So it was a great night's sleep after that.
Well, I want to get back to you. I want to bring Reem into the conversation, but you also in the piece in the book don't pull any punches about the very real, deeply felt concerns that you have about security, about governance, and we're going to get back to that in a minute. But Reem, I want to bring you into the conversation. You're the principal of a school in Hebron, which is a divided city since 1997. Your school is inside an Israeli-administered zone. And you talk about what that means for you and your students, if you talk about that.
Okay. The school's name is Cordoba, and it's in the, we call it, as Palestinians, the occupied part of the city. Now it's called, after 1997, it's called H2. H1, which is about 80% of the city, is under the Palestinian Authority control, and H2 is the old part, which is also about 20% of the city, is under the Israeli control. To reach Cordoba, you have to go through a checkpoint to be searched every morning, to walk in a street which is not allowed for Arab cars, only for Jewish cars, or you have to take the other way, which is the Islamic cemetery, a very big, and it's a cemetery, to pass to come to the school. Either ways is very difficult for children, for teachers, for journalists, for everybody. Both ways are very difficult to go.
So can I just ask, how old are the children who attend the school? What grades?
Yeah, between the age of 6 and 16, from the 1st to the 10th grades.
And you were saying in the piece that kids would actually be beaten by settlers on their way to school, attacked with sticks and rocks, even by women.
Yeah, it happened several times.
Why?
Because the Jewish community there, which is only about 400 or 500 people living in a city filled with Arabs, about 40,000 people, Arabs living there, they want to take control of the old city, let's say, of the occupied part of the city. They don't want Arabs to be around. So they're trying to make their lives as hard as possible so that these people will leave this place, just leave it.
And you're saying this is very traumatic for the children, as you would imagine, sometimes the kids need counseling as a consequence.
Yeah, of course. Of course, our school can't do without a counselor in the school we have. And also we have special programs for kids to help them to resist to stay.
You say that this has happened less recently, and I'm not sure what time frame you're talking about is recently. Why is that?
I believe it's the new policy that I started when I first came to this school, when I first was appointed to run the school. Myself, I'm more moderate, and I try to think before doing things. So I try to be a diplomat. Maybe we also made a special schedule for the school so that we can avoid the troubles in the mornings and in the afternoons. Our schedule is very tough.
But you also tell the children not to fight back, that fighting back begets more violence.
Yes.
But is that philosophical or practical?
You can say both, but we choose the safety for our children because in the end, our children are not soldiers. They are students in that place to get some education. They are not fighters yet.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm speaking with the editor of 60 Years, 60 Voices. It's a book capturing the voices of 30 Israeli and Palestinian women. And we're also speaking with two of the women profiled in the book, Barbara Sofer and Reem Al-Sharif. Barbara, in your piece in the book, you also talk about some of the hospitals which serve both Palestinian and Israeli patients and are staffed by Israelis who are treating people who they are afraid of. Can you talk about that?
I don't think that they're afraid of them when they're in the hospital. I think that the only enemy we have inside in the hospital is the disease, and that's a wonderful feeling. But what you find that's really impressive about the Hadassah hospitals is that half the terror victims in the entire country were treated in those hospitals. 22 members of staff lost first-degree relatives, a son, a daughter, a husband, a wife during the Intifada. And yet, when you walk into that hospital, everybody is able to kind of move a switch inside and to elicit your best self. Because there, we're able to. People share the same rooms. Israelis, Palestinians, people who were injured on both sides. We have teams working together of Israelis and Palestinians, and they're all involved in saving lives. It doesn't mean you're angels. It doesn't mean that you don't have your political opinions.
Well, to that point, though, you don't pull any punches either about an issue which is a very sore point with your Palestinian neighbors, the security fence or the wall. You say, I don't like these walls. I know it makes it harder for people to get to the hospital, but I like feeling a little bit better, protected. And if people really need to get to the hospital, they'll get there.
Well, it's not only the hospital. My office isn't in the hospitals in downtown Jerusalem, and within one block of where I work, where I go to work every day, there were 12 suicide bombers. So that number is cut down by the existence of the wall. Now, I hate building any walls. I'm a no-wall person. I don't like them in houses, and I don't like them out of houses. I think it's a huge waste. I think it's terrible that we have to have these divisions, and I would love to see them come down. I believe they can come down, and it makes me extremely sad and disappointed that we had to use them as a measure to put up those walls to protect ourselves.
Reem, in your piece, the question was asked, if peace talks start again, do you have any faith in them? And you say no. After every peace talk, if they come to a conclusion, it's against Palestinians. We lose more land or more rights after these talks. Maybe they'll consider the wall as the border and forget about the green line, and we lose more land.
Yes, that's right. That's what I said. I don't know. It seems that our men are no longer doing their job properly. That's why I believe in 60 years, 60 voices, women voices, that more women should be included in these negotiations, because we should take a role in leading, in doing something. Men have been doing this for over 60 years and they have failed. I'm talking about ourselves, we're losing. So maybe they have to do it differently this time.
Patricia, one of the things I think it's, you know, you look at a book like this, and just to be honest, you think, oh, that's nice. You know, Pollyanna, it's going to be all nicey nice, and people pretending that, you know what I mean, just sort of pretending that it's all kumbaya and everything's great, when you can just pick up a newspaper any day and realize that it's not. And the book does not pull punches. People are very clear about their very sharp differences of worldview, and they're not hateful in the way they express it. You know, there's no one in the book I'm reading who's hateful in the way they express themselves and expressing the desire for other people just to disappear from the face of the earth there. But yet, there are completely different perspectives about the same set of facts, viewed very, very differently. How then does one bridge that, regardless of gender?
Well, Michelle, I thought in order for there to be value in the book, for there to be accuracy, you had to have all of this diversity. And that's one thing I wanted to show to the outside world, and also for the women themselves to be able to read each other's voices and hear each other's voices. What's important here is that despite the differences, and that the women say that they are willing to talk, they are willing to connect, they are ready to listen, and that's important. You can have different realities, but if you have an agreement that the future must be better than what is currently existing, and that you set up those ground rules, then you have a place, a goal that you can get to. And the women in the book have their priorities, their commonalities, care of the children, a means of financial equity, education. Women know on the ground what's needed. They're not going to be spending quite that much time disputing who's the strongest. They're going to be saying, how do we get what the children need? How do we get what we need for the future?
Barbara, it seems as though Israel is poised to have another female prime minister.
Perhaps.
Perhaps.
Not for sure.
It's not for sure. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I love to see women in all political positions. I think we agree about that. But what we were talking about among ourselves in an informal way isn't always to have people within the political structure making those decisions. It'll take too long. But I think that we need to produce alternative decision-making areas, at least to come up with protocols of ours that we can produce by coming together and dealing with some of the problems. I agree with Reem that we women certainly can't do worse than the men have done in terms of making peace, and we want peace. I think the first part is the most important part, and that really is emphasized in 60 Years, 60 Voices, is that let's get down to what you really think. Let's not just sugarcoat everything.
Do you think you'll see peace in your lifetime?
Yes.
Reem, do you?
No. That's what I think. But I believe maybe if we start working like this, if we have the opportunity to buy this book or to get this book, to start reading, to know how other people, other women, I mean, on the other side think, maybe it will bring us closer together, that we have something in common, and this is something that we can start with.
Patricia, do you think we'll see peace in the region in your lifetime, our lifetime?
I think there's an opportunity for dialogue to begin at all levels, and that I do think it is up to citizens. I think it is up to women to come forth. I think that's the key. Men need to listen. Women need to speak up.
Patricia Smith-Melton is editor and photographer of 60 Years, 60 Voices, Israeli and Palestinian Women. Barbara Sofer and Reem Al-Sharif are two of the women profiled in the book. They were all kind enough to join me here in our Washington, D.C. studios. I thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Finally, as Thanksgiving approaches, we'd like to ask, what are you giving thanks for this holiday? Family, good health? Or what about that special Thanksgiving memory that still brings you joy? To share your attitudes of gratitude, please call our comment line at 202-842-3522. That's 202-842-3522. Please be sure to tell us your name, how to pronounce it, and how to pronounce the name of the city or town where you live. And you can always go to our webpage at npr.org. Just click on Tell Me More and blog it out. And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.